Welcome to AZMcast, a peer-reviewed, evidence-based podcast heavily seasoned with expert opinion. For all you new listeners, I'm going to give you a quick tutorial on how to use this podcast to its fullest potential. For you faithful veterans, you can go ahead and skip ahead to the good stuff. As you listen to this podcast, you'll hear contributors give opinions on everything from practice styles to diagnostic evaluations to emergency medicine philosophy. When you hear the bell ding, that means that the opinion is backed by evidence. Check your screen on your device to see the reference paper, and we suggest taking a screenshot for future reading. When you hear the turkey gobble, that's just our opinion, and you can decide whether you want to take it or leave it. Hi, everybody, and welcome to the June episode of AZMcast. We took a brief hiatus during a really nice April and May in Tucson to talk about neonatal fever, which I thoroughly enjoyed. But now it's June. The seniors are sleepwalking through their last shifts, and it's hot and sweaty outside. So it's back to skin and soft tissue infections with the new emergence of pus. Some of you are pus fanatics and love to get every last drop of purulence out, and the other ones are sane and normal people. But we all have to deal with it in the ED, so we gathered the greatest minds in the history of people who would go on record for this podcast to discuss the management of abscesses. Doctors Ali Min, Chris Williams, Brian Drummond, and Chris Edwards, PharmD, PSP, you'll have to listen to the episode to get that one. We'll be starting us off with the most odoriferous of all the abscesses, pilonidal cysts and Bartholin gland abscesses. Aren't you excited? These are their own special kind of abscess that we felt deserved their own spotlight and face shield. So put some lavender oil in your mask and get ready to plunge into this month's episode of AZMcast on the abscesses down below.
Can we call you Sex Panther now?
Absolutely.
Pharmaceutical Sex Panther.
Yeah, you gotta throw the pharmaceutical.
PSP.
Pharmaceutical Sex Panther.
PSP.
PSP. You need a shirt for that.
That's a That's scoop
happening.
Top.
That is happening.
PSP.
Let's order you a new jacket. Get a new jacket.
Chris Edwards, PharmD, PSP.
What's that stand for? You know.
Oh, I think you know.
No.
So we're back to talk about more skin and soft tissue infections. We're going to talk about what happens when you leave one of these infections to dwell long enough with a little bit of a nidus, and you get the collection of pus. There are two types of people in this world. There are people that love pus and people that hate pus. Who's in the love pus, love getting pus out and squeezing it out?
Well, I'm a squeezer.
Just Brian.
I'll get after it.
I hate pus.
I hate pus. I hate pus too.
I hate it, man.
Like, that's why I got into pharmacy.
Brian, Chris gets to sit there from the door and be like, that does not need antibiotics. Yeah, I do not like pus. Like, some people describe the satisfaction they get of draining pus out, and I'm like, it's not worth it to me.
Yeah, it's not dopaminergic for me.
Yeah, have you ever seen the YouTube channels, Dr.
Uh-huh.
Pimple Popper?
Yeah, Dr. Pimple Popper.
All the, like, dedicated to pus.
She has a show now. My kids watch it, and they love
Your kids
it.
Watch it?
Oh, yeah. They have taped it.
We're going to have to talk about screen time.
They're taping it on the DVR, C-bum, and they're just watching
just
that
nasty
thing. They're like, check this out, Dad. Oh, yeah. Here we
have
go.
Have you seen the cupcakes that are like zits?
Yeah. It's like frosting coming out.
Yeah.
Anyway, so if you love pus, you can work my shift and take all my abscesses, because I hate it, man.
That's why we have residents.
Well, actually, that's why we have medical students. I'm going to bleep that. Medical students love pus, man.
Such a troublemaker.
They love the pus. They love to get all the pus out, and it's like, oh, there's an abscess. And the first years are like, oh, I'll do it. I love procedures. Of like, anything's a procedure. It's like a pelvic exam is not a procedure, okay? Like, after a while, it's like, you know, I'm kind of, there's a handful of procedures I enjoy doing. I enjoy things that will save somebody's life. I don't enjoy things that people curse at me while I'm doing. So
there's something going to fly into your eye.
Gosh. Yes. If I can make one recommendation, it's face shields for abscesses.
Mm-hmm. All the
face shields. You do not want to get this stuff on you. So we got to get pus out. Pus is a collection of your immune system and dead bacteria and necrotized soft tissue that needs to be dealt with. And I think that those of us that have been in practice for a while like to pretend that we can just avoid it and let's give some antibiotics to it and let the next person IND it. You know, same with narcotics and everything else that we do, of like, I'm not going to deal with this problem, I'm going to let somebody else do it. But we have to deal with this. We have to get the pus out, because no, there's no circulation to the center of that chewy, nougaty filling inside of the abscess. Allie just gave me a hurl sign right there. There's no blood flow to it. So the antibiotics you give, you can give oral antibiotics, you can give IV antibiotics, you can get a needle and inject antibiotics to the center of it. It's not going to go anywhere, because you can't get penetration to this. You got to kill the infection and get it out. Chris, you think we can get a needle and just inject it with antibiotics?
I mean, it's a crazy idea, but it may just be crazy enough. No, I think if you have, if you have a needle in there, like, definitely get the pus out.
Okay.
Yeah, you're never going to get adequate penetration with your antibiotics into an abscess.
So, you know, when I see, and it's not an abscess, right? What is the chief complaint?
Spider bite.
Spider bite. Yep. Points to Allie, man. The spider bite is always, it's always a spider bite. Something bit me. If it was a spider, and every once in a while it's like, it was a spider that bit you? Yeah, it was a spider that bit. Did you see the spider? Yeah, I got it in this Tupperware right here and I wanted to show it to you. Oh. Well, all right then. We're still going to have to get the pus out. But at least I'm not as concerned that you're an IV drug user now and ask you all those questions. But, you know, it's always a spider bite. It's something else. It's misleading. It's like I was talking with our medical students this week about all of the colors that we learn in medicine that are wrong. Like, pale people are not white. They're yellow. And jaundiced people are not yellow. They're orange colored, you know, when they're really jaundiced. And like the cyanotic people are not blue, they're like this steely gray color. Like, I've seen these colors they teach you are not quite correct. Spider bites are not actual abscesses. It's an abscess that somebody attributes to a spider.
No one wants to come in and say, I guess I'm a really dirty person, I'm not taking care of my skin, and I've got an abscess. And that, you know, and I think there's a stigma that goes with it that they just don't want to be a part of. So they're looking for whatever they can grasp to and say, something got me, this is not me, this is them. And that's just because they don't understand that abscesses just happen to people.
Yeah.
And sometimes they are dirty.
Dirty, nasty little creatures.
And sometimes it is, as I referred to in the other podcast, sometimes it's hair follicle, mm-hmm. sometimes it's sebaceous gland, sometimes it's sweat. I don't know about you, but I saw more pilonidal abscesses this summer during the last 2 months than I've seen the rest of the year. And that's because it's an area where people that tend to be heavier, people that tend to be more hirsute, and tend to be outside where it's sweaty. I mean, that's a setup to have some kind of skin breakdown, irritation, an area that's tough to clean, maybe like the underarm, or areas that have a lot of hair, maybe areas that are affected by shaving a lot. You get that irritation, you get a bacteria that burrows in, it attaches to a hair follicle or some other nidus, and then it begins to proliferate until you get pus. And then there's the other side of it where it's either an abscess from an open wound, a foreign body or something, or somebody that's repeatedly causing those with IV drug use.
So before we talk about our kind of approach to treating abscesses, maybe we should talk about some of the special abscesses out there. So we have abscesses that involve like the back along the gluteal cleft. We have abscesses that involve the perineum.
You can say butt crack.
Butt crack. I can?
Yeah.
This is a children's show, isn't it? No?
Well, children might be listening, but they don't know what a gluteal cleft is.
So you can have an abscess
on your educate everybody.
Back butt, but you can also have an abscess of your front butt. And then, you know, sometimes we'll see patients who come in with, like, just diffuse, matted microabscesses in the armpit or in the groin, right? And that's got its own name. We call that a hidradenitis suppurativa. And maybe we should talk about these and then perianal, perirectal abscesses, these special abscesses.
Yeah. So probably the first one Chris talked about was right in the butt crack. And these are the ones I've been seeing the most recently, which is the pilonidal abscess. So these start as pilonidal cysts. And the cysts just is something that you've had there for a while, but all it takes is a little bit of infiltration from some bacteria, and that cystic fluid gets inflamed, gets swollen, and becomes incredibly painful. And these are abscesses that it never ceases to amaze me how much pus is hidden in this little iceberg of a infected source. It doesn't look like much. It's maybe like half a fingertip, but you do that injection, and not only is there a ton in there, but it's often under pressure, mm-hmm. which is why I highly recommend that you wear a face mask.
Yeah, these ones squirt. They squirt and they smell horrible. I don't know what cultures they grow out, but it seems to be maybe a little bit higher on the anaerobe side of things because it just smells.
And when you've the other reason I do the mask is I have breath drops, little minty breath drops that I usually take orally to prevent patients from having to smell my bad breath, but they also go very nicely in your mask to try to help with this spray that comes out from the pilonidal cyst. As much as I hate abscesses, I do really enjoy being in the room for a resident's first pilonidal abscess.
You're horrible.
Because no amount of preparation can get them ready for what they're about to witness, and the look of horror that comes over their face, it's like from MASH or, you know, some kind of old TV show where all you can see is the look in their eyes because you can't see the a gaped mouth that's underneath the mask. It's really incredible.
Do you mouth breathe or nose breathe in that situation?
I nose breathe because I have the breath mints. Yeah.
Well, right, and you don't want to get anything in your mouth. Droplets.
But then you can smell it microscopic more through droplets. The nose. Yeah.
You're going to smell it no matter what. Maybe. Just enjoy it.
So then on the front side, for the front butt, as we say, there's a different kind of abscess that's not uncommon there, and that's the Bartholin's gland abscess. So this involves the the inside of labia majora, and presents as a blocked gland, and then that secondarily becomes infected. So sometimes they present early where there's a cystic structure that's already forming. Not a lot of erythema there, but still pretty tender. Those sometimes can be treated just by starting antibiotics, usually not amenable to drainage, open drainage at that time. Sometimes I'll just 18 needle it and see if I can alleviate the swelling at that point. But I always tell the patients, I think we even alluded to this on the last podcast, that there, even if I'm starting on antibiotics, the fact that I'm feeling a mass there, there's a very good chance, probably 50% or greater, that this is still going to develop into something that needs to be drained in a few days. Or they have waited a few days, they're coming in, and now it's time, it's amenable to drainage. These ones are, I mean, all abscesses are hard to get adequate pain control. These ones are really hard to get adequate pain control. It's in a very sensitive part of the body, hard to numb up. How do you guys approach this? Any differently than you would other abscesses? Are you more quicker on the procedural sedation for this one? Or do you just kind of say, here's a stick, bite down on it, and here we go?
I knock them out. I ketamine them. The last Bartholin glands abscess I did, I put this lady into her native language. I gave her so much ketamine. And when I incised it, green pus shot about 2 feet off of the bed. So, again, this is an area that is under a lot of pressure and that can hide a lot. It doesn't look like much. But the chief complaint, as we talked about spider bites for other abscesses, the chief complaint I usually get for this one is there's an egg in my vagina is what I've actually seen written down on the triage paperwork. Wow. Because it feels like this ovoid swelling that in the labia, which is quite fleshy and can hide a lot, you can palpate this egg, basically. It's an ovoid shape, and it needs to be drained, or else it's going to get worse.
Do you have a special approach to drainage? And then particularly here, there's this thing called the word catheter.
Word.
And, you know, for those who have used the word catheter, it has a hard time staying in the hole that you create there. And if you're doing this IND like you normally would, which is generous enough to extend the length of the abscess, the word catheter is not staying in there. You're not going to be able to blow up that balloon to the right extent. So I don't use the word catheter. It falls out too frequently. There is this description for marsupialization of the of the abscess, I don't do that either. So if I know for sure that this is something that I would like to put a word catheter into, this is when I use the 11 blade. I make a nick, generous enough, of course, to get the pus out, but I don't want it to be too large. And it's okay to not make a very generous incision because I'm leaving a catheter inside. And then you put the catheter through this very small nicked incision, and then you can blow it up. And but usually I don't do that.
For those of you that have never seen this word catheter, essentially what it is you've got a kind of a double lumen type catheter with a balloon, like a Foley balloon, on one end that's going to go into the incision site, and you've got a needle with a syringe full of sterile saline that is going to be blown up so that that balloon will kind of hold its place inside of that incision you made and will allow for drainage so that you don't get it, you don't have the incision close up.
Yeah, it's like an abscess Foley.
Yeah, exactly.
So I just did a little, just a quick literature search just on treatment, because it seems like because the word catheter is so difficult to really put in and have it stay in place, that there might be other options. But there's a systematic review, looks like in 2009. There are not a lot of studies looking at this, and they actually ended up only looking at 24 studies, most of which were case series, so really not great information. And they had all kinds of different treatment options in here, things that I don't think we would do, like silver nitrate gland ablation.
Ooh.
And we don't do marsupialization in the emergency department, although we know that that's what's going to cure any and prevent any recurrence of this, versus other options like word catheter, things like that, and then incision and drainage. So really, the evidence is so poor that they can't really say one way or the other, but there really are a lot of options, I guess. I mean, I've gone to just simple IND with gauze packing, mm-hmm. in some cases, because I know that the word catheter, number one, looks really uncomfortable if it were me. Mm-hmm. And I can't get it to stay even if I try to do it. Yeah. And so sometimes I've just gone to gauze packing and have them come back for reevaluation. And the other thing I would say is when we drain abscesses, we often go for the point of fluctuance, the point of most fluctuance that we think the pus, you know, will be most productive. But for these, you really need to think about cosmetic outcome and things like that. And so really we talk about going on the mucosal surface as much as possible,
yeah.
when you're doing your incision. And it'll heal faster if you make your incision on the mucosal aspect as well.
Yeah, if you've got a peritonsillar abscess, you're not going to go under the jaw through the skin into the peritonsillar space. You're going to set yourself up for tracking of bacteria into a place where it's not supposed to be, in a nice fistula. So if you can go through the mucosal surface, that's going to be best, because that's where it started. It started with this flora that was already in the vaginal canal, and so keep it there just like you would for the mouth.
Do they need gyne follow-up? Should I be sending them to gyne? I usually don't.
I usually do, because I'm worried the word catheter is going to fall out, and they're prone to having these again.
Right, and that's why I'm wondering, maybe they should be getting more definitive treatment than what I'm getting. All right.
As far as the pilonidal cyst, I tend to pack these. I express them as best as I can. These are painful, but I don't find that they are as painful as the word catheter, or sorry, as the Bartholin glands abscess. But sometimes they need sedation. Usually they'll do fine with some, in my bet, fentanyl and Versed is usually enough to make them a little bit schnockered, and then some local anesthetic. And then I'll IND these. I will pack them. I'll tell them you need warm soaks, compresses, but then I let them know there's a cyst wall that covers this. And so this is not going to heal up and go away like a cutaneous abscess would. If this returns, you need to talk to a surgeon about carving this thing out. Mm-hmm. And so I have always surgery follow-up for them when they're done.
Yep.
Do you guys give antibiotics for either one of these special population abscesses?
No.
I don't.
I'm not supposed to.
I would agree with that.
You agree, Chris?
I don't always, but I have in some cases.
I find that most of these don't have any surrounding cellulitis. This is more of the staph abscess, and they're very, the skin actually a lot of times looks normal. you know, it just looks swollen, but it doesn't look red at all. I don't think either of these really are true MRSA infections, nor do I go after them as a MRSA infection. And a lot of times with the pilonidal, like Aaron said, there's going to be a sac there. You know, so sometimes they present with a cyst that's not infected or inflamed. I don't always drain those. I tell them, you need to see a surgeon to have this sac removed. If it looks infected, then I will drain them and then tell them they need to go see a surgeon because we're getting the pus out today, but I'm not going to cure this.
Just one quick note on antibiotics. If you do decide that it's appropriate for this patient, just keep in mind that you may not see the same bacterial pattern that you normally would with just a straight skin and soft tissue infection, given the location of these abscesses to the GI tract. You're more likely to see things like E. coli, Bacteroides, which is why it probably smells a bit different. And you may want to... Yes.
Yeah. Special.
It smells special. Yeah, which...
smells like a dumpster fire.
Which, fortunately, trimethoprim sulfamethoxazole is going to cover you for MRSA as well as E. coli. So it'll cover most of your common pathogens. But if you start going down some various other pathways, you may want to just think about getting that additional coverage on there. So... adding something like, if you're going to do cephalosporin, I would probably not do that and do amoxicillin clavulanic acid instead to get that additional coverage and then add an anti-MRSA agent on top of that.
It smells like a diaper full of rotten curry. I'm just going to be sprinkling these in throughout. I've got like 6 or 7 more of them.
Rotten curry?
I didn't know curry went bad.
I didn't know it went bad. Starts as that curry paste. Could sit in the market all day.
All right, so let's go. We started at pilonidal abscess, and we ended at Bartholin's glands abscess. Let's meet in the middle and talk about perirectal, perianal abscess. And more the distinguishing between the two, because there's a very definitive fork in the road of management of whether I'm going to IND this or whether I'm going to have surgery IND this. And forgive me because I always forget the difference between the two, but I know which one is dangerous. There's the perianal abscess, which is just next to the anus. It's
more superficial.
It's cutaneous. Yeah. It's superficial versus the perirectal abscess, which you're worried is tracking along the course of the dentate line. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
That's right.
I believe it's the dentate line that's going to separate whether this is just going to be a superficial cutaneous abscess versus a more internal tracking along the rectum in a fascial plane abscess that's more associated with things like inflammatory bowel disease, Crohn's, ulcerative colitis, something more concerning. The difference between these two is supposed to be with a rectal exam. When you stick your finger into the patient's anal canal, does it hurt more than if you just press on the abscess cutaneously? I have not found this to be highly sensitive.
I have, but it's all about prepping the patient. So you just tell them, listen, you're complaining of pain in this spot on your butt, and it hurts when I push, and it does. Even with the perirectal abscess, they will still have tenderness and pain, at the anus. And so I'll push there, and I'll say, that's pain. Okay. I'm going to now put my finger in your butt, which is going to hurt more. But I'm really doing it to feel for a mass, and you'll feel a mass in some of these. Actually, very frequently, you'll feel a mass. And so I said, I know it hurts more, and it's almost a subjective quality. I'm looking at them, and I'm seeing the degree of grimace and discomfort they appear to have. I put my finger in. If I'm feeling a mass, and they're jumping, it's like a chandelier sign of your butt.
I'd like to break in here and just comment that we here at AZMcast are very proud of the high quality emergency medicine education that we provide on this program. We are also very proud of some of the terms that we have coined, such as haggis in lieu of gestalt and pharmaceutical sex panther. However, chandelier sign of the butt is not one we are particularly proud of. Therefore, I would like to put the onus for this new term squarely on its creator, Dr. Chris Williams. And chandelier sign of the butt will hereforth and forever be known as Chris Williams sign.
You know, they're probably a perirectal abscess. And, it's basically like, okay, which one's more painful? Even with the perianal abscess, usually putting your finger in there hurts more. But You can tell by kind of the subjective grimacing, and then if you're feeling any masses there, that's how I tease it out.
I wish you guys could see Chris's hand signals as he describes this, because I'm just,
I do
quite
the impressive. Same when I explain the bimanual exam to patients, because I need them to to tell the difference between, you know, both the external and the internal pain. And I've got these hand motions that I've caught myself doing at the times, and I always have to stop myself. And so thank you for pointing that out.
I think I'm so. Skull third.
That's the differentiation between the two. And the concern is that a surgeon's going to have to go in and dig a lot deeper versus we can do an IND of a perirectal abscess, but when we do, we're not actually going to get to the problem. If we've got just a cutaneous abscess near the anus, then that's fine. It'll heal up, no trouble. But if it's perirectal and we incise it and say, yeah, go home, you're fine, this can get a lot worse, and the patients can get septic and develop intra-abdominal abscesses. So we'd like to catch these when we can. So doing a good exam, looking for family history of inflammatory bowel disease, maybe more abdominal comfort, maybe a patient that looks a little bit sicker, that's been having blood in their stool beforehand. These are things to kind of consider.
I actually use ultrasound in these patients, and I use it for, I'll be able to, you can see a tract, the abscess tract, actually heading up and in towards the anal canal. And so if I start to see that tracking versus I see the bottom on ultrasound where it just stops, then I feel more comfortable. So if I see a track, I'm going to call the surgeon. If I see a bottom of this abscess, like, okay, it's right here. I'm going to go for it. So, yes, the farther away, I think, from the rectum itself, the less likely it's going to track in. But you can have some that are still pretty superficial, just right by that ductate, pectinate, whatever line. And, you know, it can just be right there. And you can take care of that. I do agree with, like, using the rectal exam. I think that's helpful, too. But I use ultrasound in these to help define when I'm going to do it versus calling someone.
All the more reason to please clean the ultrasound probes when you're done using them.
Mm-hmm.
Please.
I put a glove over every linear probe I use on abscesses. I'm not a Tegaderm person. I never have been. I put a glove, covers the whole thing, fold the glove in half, throw the glove away.
Works well.
Is that what you're using on this, the linear probe, too?
I'm sorry, yeah, that's what I'm using on the linear probe. So if I'm doing an abscess or anything, it also, you know, because it covers the whole handle of the probe, so if my hand's a little bit dirty, I'm touching just the glove surface, so then and it's easy, I don't have to, like, sit and pull this Tegaderm structure off, but it covers the whole probe. If I'm getting the core of the probe, I don't have that covered. But
if you're doing an exam and you're pretty confident that you're right, this is a perianal abscess, do you still CT them? And the reason I bring it up is, why do they have a perianal abscess? Are you concerned for Crohn's disease? Is this kind of their first presenting complaint? And to tease that out, I think it requires, again, history. So if the patient tells you that they've been having other symptoms that you think could correlate to that, then I go for the CT. Of course, there's times when it's a little ambiguous. Is this really perirectal? I'm not sure. I CT those. Surgeons frequently want it before they go after a perirectal abscess. And so if I'm concerned for perirectal, I always get the CT. But if sometimes even the perianal ones, I'll consider a CT in those cases. I don't know what your thoughts are.
I try not to get them in the perianal, depending on how close it is to the anus. Like, if it's, you know, if it's a couple centimeters off of midline, it's less likely, I think, that it's tracked down. And it's a little bit easier to get a good rectal exam at that point. If it's right on the hole, you know, on the hole, I think that Preparation H feels good.
Yeah.
If it's right, if it's right there,
wheatens. Why are you saying it that
cool
way?
Cool whip. If it's right there, then I'm more concerned that it's going to be perirectal.
Yeah, I usually don't CTM. It's unless it was part of the diagnostic workup that I'm unsure. Maybe it's this rectal pressure and pain. I can't really define the abscess, and I'm not sure that those would be, I think, the times that I would CTM. If I see that there's an abscess and either I need to drain it or the surgeon needs to drain it, then I just go towards kind of the drainage pathway, and they can do further diagnostics as a cause later, unless it's an area of concern or question that I feel that this person's never going to get seen again, or they're bringing it up. That's when I would maybe CT him.